Hi everyone, Robbie here. I'm excited to announce the release of my second novel, Truth, available now on Amazon. Here's a short description. As host of a popular conservative news show, Leo Price's business is conspiracies and fake news, and business is booming. But one picture changes everything. Leo is given a single photo, decades old, that reveals shocking crimes by those in power. Missing his past career as a real journalist, Leo wants to investigate, but chasing this story could cost him his job and maybe even his life. But forgetting isn't an option. Since his discovery, pale, lidless eyes are creeping into his vision. Nightmares of torture and death are invading his sleep. All he hears are whispers of lies. Something's tormenting him, and it won't let him forget what he's learned. Leo must reveal the truth or be haunted by it. It's a great book for fans of psychological horror or political mystery. The link to purchase it is in the show notes or at my website, robbiedorman.com. You can also read it for free with Kindle Unlimited. I appreciate you checking it out. Hello everyone, I'm Robbie Dorman, and this is The Serial Fanaticist, the podcast for fans of everything. Welcome! Today I am joined by Andrew Bloom from theandrewblog.net to discuss the 1987 action movie Predator. I consider Predator the best action movie ever made, and Andrew had never seen it, so I made him watch it. And now, I want you to sit down. Andrew didn't really like it. So, we discuss why I love it so much, and why Andrew didn't. We also cover how Jean-Claude Van Damme almost became the Predator. Under the discussion. Hello everyone, I'm here, once again, with Andrew Bloom of theandrewblog.net to talk about, we're talking about Predator.
I believe we're talking about the famed 1950s and 60s director Otto Preminger.
I don't know who that is.
You should, Robbie. He was, in addition to being a very excellent director, he was Mr. Freeze in Batman 66.
Oh, okay. Well, I know what Batman 66 is, so that's good. We're talking about Predator. Today, the 1987.
We are.
I'm sorry, Andrew, if you're not prepared, we'll have to wing it.
All these good auto notes going to waste.
Well, that'll be the next podcast. We'll do some I'll dig into the filmography of Otto Preminger. Is there any movies that he's directed that I would know?
Fallen Angel?
Nope.
He did a lot of controversial films from his time that have.
We're talking about 1987 action film Predator. Starring Arnold Schwarzenegger, directed by John McTiernan. I'm going to say this right now. If you haven't seen, this is what I said to Andrew that basically led us to recording this podcast. Is like, if you haven't watched Predator, go watch Predator. Like, stop what you're doing. Like, you're cooking dinner, stop cooking dinner. Go find a way to watch Predator. And then after you're done watching Predator, you can eat. That's how important it is.
From my standpoint, I would please encourage the listeners to turn off any ovens and make sure that any open flames are extinguished before starting to watch Predator.
If you can do both at once, that's okay too, I guess. I love Predator. That's my first statement. I want to make it very clear. I love Predator. It is my favorite action movie. I think it is the best action movie of all time. I've watched it many times, dozens of times I've seen Predator. And probably dozens more than that, Predator has been on while I'm around it. You know, not directly paying attention to Predator, but it is there for me if I want to sit down and watch a particular scene. Oh, this is where he says, if it bleeds, we can kill it. I need to see this again. It's very important. I capture this one moment for the thousandth time.
So even if you've not been watching Predator, you have been Predator adjacent.
Exactly. Predator adjacent for a lot of stuff. Andrew, we were talking about this for a while before we actually record this podcast, for months now. I think I've been like, hey, Andrew, watch Predator. It's very important. Very important business. You watch Predator. And then you finally did. And you sent me a sad, very sad text message. Actually, and I was actually thinking, like, I was just thinking, absentmindedly, right around when you sent me it. I'm like, I wonder if Andrew's watched Predator yet. And then you sent me the text message. You're like, Robbie, I don't know your exact words, paraphrase. I'm afraid to inform you that I don't love Predator.
It's always a very difficult thing when somebody encourages you excitingly to watch a movie that they love and that they think you'll really like and that they think is excellent. And then you kind of have to come back and, you know, say to them, this isn't my favorite thing in the world, when you were hoping to have the, oh my God, this part was great, and yeah, that part was great, and did you see this part? Oh, I didn't even think about that part. Instead, you have the, like, yeah, no, that part was good conversation, which is never as fun of a conversation to have.
I mean, for a podcast, it might actually be better for someone to have a contrasting opinion because it, you know, has interesting discussion and arguments about what things mean versus us just going nodding our heads and saying, man, that's great. That's
true. We don't want to have the Chris Farley podcast or anything like that. But at the same time, you know, it's probably makes for less good copy, but probably more enjoyable for the individuals to get to both mutually rave about whatever the thing is.
That's true. I say watch Predator not because I wouldn't say watch Predator because it's my favorite, one of my favorite movies and my favorite action movie. I just generally think it's great. Like, I just, you know, I recommend if I think a film or something is great, I'm probably gonna say, hey, you should watch it or read it or whatever. I thought of the best way to explain, I think, why it's my favorite action movie and why I think it is the best action movie.
All right, lay it on me. Convince me, Robbie.
I don't think I'm going to convince you. At best, I can hope you understand my argument. That's really what I'm hoping for. You understand what I mean. I think Predator is the best action movie in the same way that I think Homer's Enemy is the best Simpsons episode.
I am intrigued but confused, so please go on.
I think, I was thinking about this where you yourself had told me, like, when I was talking about it, like, I think Predator is the best action movie, and you're like, better than Die Hard. And I was like, yeah, I think I said Die Hard is number two to me. And I agree. I think I stand by that. I think Die Hard is number two. Die Hard's great. They're both directed by John McTiernan.
I was going to say, it just seemed like the closest competitor. And they're something that could be compared as an 80s movie, same director, same, like, that era action star.
It is. They're both directed by John McTiernan. They came out 1987, 1988, one year after each other. But they're very different. They are both action movies, but they are very, very, very different action movies. And I think looking at the catalog of John McTiernan, where he made a lot of great movies in the 80s and early 90s, and then made Rollerball and Basic.
Starring Paul Heyman, right?
Yeah, Paul Heyman is in that movie. I had forgotten. And then he went to prison for perjury. Apparently is hated by most of Hollywood now, so I don't know if we're ever going to see John McTiernan direct again.
He's in movie jail.
In
addition to being in literal jail.
He hired people to spy. He hired a private detective to spy on a movie producer and record him without his knowledge and then lied about it to judge.
What end?
I think it was about Rollerball. I think he wanted to prove that the producer wanted Rollerball to fail or something. Like, he thought that the producer of Rollerball had some nefarious purpose for the film and didn't really care if it succeeded or failed and was kind of like throwing McTiernan to the wolves or something. He apparently also has he also used the same private detective to spy on his wife at the time and then lied about that as well to a judge, and the judge did not take kindly to any of this stuff. He went to prison for a year, I believe, and then filed for bankruptcy. So not John McTiernan's struggling, I guess.
I mean, as much as I enjoyed Die Hard, it sounds like it's probably best for this guy if he is not in positions of power over people.
Yeah, I don't know. I all I know is that he is apparently not liked by most Hollywood at this point because he like tried to spy on them. So I doubt we're ever going to see John McTiernan in a movie again. And that's okay. I think he's done enough for the genre and for films. I think he's made a lot of good movies when he was directing. But you look at the movies he's made, and like he made Predator and Die Hard back-to-back years, both considered top-of-the-top action movies by most people. Like, you ask people, what's the best action movie? Like, a lot of people, their answer is going to be Die Hard or Predator. And, you know, there's other people say, you know, RoboCop, which also came out in 1987, the same year as Predator, which also was the same year as Lethal Weapon.
Filmed in Dallas, by the way. RoboCop.
RoboCop's great. It's number 3 on my list, by the way. Anyway, I'll keep it tracking at home. He directed those two movies. And then and then you look at his filmography as it goes on, and he directed, after that, Hunt for Red October, which is not really an action movie. I mean, you could argue it, I guess. I don't consider it one. And then he did The Last Action Hero and Die Hard with a Vengeance.
I've never seen Last Action Hero, but I've heard good things about it. But
it enters
Predator, so yeah.
They're very different. That's the thing. And I think in those three movies, the looking back at that discography and thinking about it, what you wrote in your piece about Predator and how you feel about Die Hard, thinking about what Predator is and what Die Hard is and what Last Action Hero is, they feel like a trilogy to me, an unofficial weird trilogy. All of them deconstruct the action movie genre in different ways.
I'm going to go with intrigued but confused. I mean, I totally get Die Hard as a deconstruction of it. And from what I know of Last Action Hero, it makes sense to me that it's a deconstruction. I'm going to need some persuading that Predator is a deconstruction of the action movie.
Okay. Have you seen Commando, Andrew?
I have not seen Commando.
Have you? I mean, you've seen Terminator, right? You've seen Terminator, obviously.
Yes, I have seen Terminator.
Everyone on Earth has seen Terminator. I think you come out of the womb, the first thing they do is make you watch Terminator and Terminator 2, probably.
Well, they want you to know what it's like emerging into a new world completely naked.
Give me your boots, your jacket. So, you know, you look back at the action movie genre, and it starts, I don't know, you ask different, I looked it up online to see if there's like a consensus on what is an action movie and what is not. Of course, there is not a consensus because I asked the internet a question. Why would it give me one answer when it could give me thousands of answers?
There's an old chestnut about rabbis, where if you ask four rabbis a question, you'll get five opinions. I think the internet is that magnified.
Yeah.
Possibly because there's many rabbis on the internet.
There's many rabbis on the internet. But my thoughts after reading everything and what I've, you know, from my experience watching film, I would say action movies really started in the 50s or 60s with Westerns and movies like The Wild Bunch with Peckinpah, and spy movies with Bond movies are, I think, a kind of proto-action movie. At least action movie as we understand it in the modern day, you know, it's like one-man army kind of stuff, you know, where you have either one man or a small group of men fighting for something. And, you know, and shooting and killing and violence. And sometimes there's wit and smart MacGyvering their way to problems through problems and everything like that. But using guns, like technology and with action scenes, with a lot of stuff happening, explosions. It doesn't have to be complicated.
That's good.
I think that's what I think of action movies. Like, they start in the 50s and 60s with kind of the more progressive Westerns and spy movies. And then you get a lot of genre movies like, you know, kung fu movies, some blaxploitation movies in the 70s, along with like urban crime dramas that, you know, were sort of action movies, you know, like or movies like Bullet or French Connection.
Both. I think if you want to consider those action movies, both have to be in the top 10 of the genre.
They're both very good. I think it's a little bit of a stretch to call them action movies. I think they contain DNA there. I think there's DNA that is like, you know, there, but I wouldn't call them whole cloth action movies. They contain action movies within them. They contain multitudes. But they're both very good movies. I'm not going to argue that. But I, when I think action movies, I can see the origins in all those films. When I think action movies, I think big guns, big muscles, hundreds of deaths, machine guns and armies and one-liners, because that's the 80s action movies were the ones I was raised on. It's the ones I watched a lot when I was a kid. And I don't know if that means that to me, that's what I think of when I think of action movies. And everything else that spawns from that is kind of a reaction to it. It is a deconstruction of it, like Die Hard is. And it certainly doesn't make Die Hard bad. It makes Die Hard great because of how smart it is about deconstructing that stuff. Like, and then you see them depart from those things, like with movies like The Matrix and John Wick and Taken, things like that. Do you think the superhero movies are action movies? Do they qualify?
I do. I definitely do. It tends to be singularly focused on individuals. It tends to have lots of explosion. It tends to have lots of combat, at least as has been traditionally adapted in feature films. I definitely think that superhero stories on the big screen count as action movies. I think they don't have to be. I think there's a lot of ways you can do superhero movies and have them not be that, but let's put it this way. Not every superhero movie has to be an action movie, but most of them are.
I mean, I agree with you. I think that's the same conclusion I came to. But I was just thinking about this in long legacy of what an action movie is. It came to like what the modern day action movie is. I think it's a little bit more broad now because it includes superhero movies. It also includes John Wick or Mad Max Fury Road, The Raid, movies like that. Which are some are ultra violent. Well, you look at superhero movies, they're not as there's not much blood in them and things like that. And yet they still somehow I don't mind it. You know, usually, you know, when I look at 80s action movies, almost all of them are rated R. Almost all of them have extraordinarily explicit levels of violence. People getting their arms ripped off, people getting impaled, blown up, all kinds of stuff. But I think of getting back to my original point. Big muscles, big guns, explosions, combat, one-liners. And this is 1987 when this comes out. This is all established at this point. These are tropes by 1987. Like Commando came out in 1984. Terminator came out in 1982. Arnold became a star because of Terminator. He was already in the Conan movies. He was already known then. Commando made him an even bigger star after Terminator. Rambo was a thing at this point. The First Blood came out, which was First Blood is like an actual like movie, a film. It's not really an action movie.
Follows the same trajectory of Stallone's path with the Rocky movies, where it starts out as an actual sort of down to earth exploration of one man going through a difficult time and finding a way through it with some serious hardships. And then with each successive installment, it gets bigger and louder and dumber.
Yes. I mean, I'm looking forward to Rambo, Farmer Rambo, Home Alone 5 or whatever it is. Have you seen the trailer for the new Rambo movie?
I have not. I'm not sure my weak heart could take it.
He's a farmer. He's a farmer and he sets up Home Alone style traps for some sort of bad local American bad guys.
I'm not sure I buy that Sylvester Stallone would know how to farm.
He's on a farm.
Maybe Rambo can.
Rambo's on a farm. I'm not going to say he's a farmer. All I've seen from the trailer, he's on a farm. One man is impaled with a pitchfork. Spring-loaded pitchfork hits a guy in the chest. I saw that in the trailer.
Wait, spring-loaded? Oh, because it's his trap. He doesn't just have those lying around for high efficiency hay shuffling.
Some bad guy steps on a thing and the pitchfork gets him. But that's Rambo. That's where Rambo is now. Rambo has gone progressively insaner as it goes along. But that by 1987, I know part two had come out. I'm not even sure if Rambo it was Rambo 3. When did Rambo 3 come out? That's the question. I want to say afterwards. 88. Okay, so Rambo 3 had Rambo 3 is absolutely insane. He goes to Afghanistan in Rambo 3.
He helps those brave soldiers in Afghanistan who would never turn on America again in gratitude.
Yeah, Rainbow 3 and Charlie Wilson's War. They're, you know, those are spiritual.
Surprisingly effective double feature.
Yeah, exactly. But those 48 Hours had come out, which is the other kind of, I guess, the split in the genre, where you have the buddy cop action movie, where it becomes basically, it gets perfected in Lethal Weapon, which comes out in the same year.
Perfected! Are we going to use that word again?
What is the best buddy cop movie?
I don't know, but it ain't that, brother.
I like Lethal Weapon.
Whoa. I don't want to derail us on hating on a different 80s movie, so I will package my Lethal Weapon comments for later.
I don't know. I just, when I think of, like, I'm not saying it's a perfect movie. I am saying that as a buddy cop movie, Lethal Weapon does what I want a buddy cop movie to do better than any other buddy cop movie. 48 Hours is not as good, even though it's basically started the genre. There's so many of them that have come out, and most of them are just like, hey, what if it was Lethal Weapon, but instead one of them is Jackie Chan?
I've heard worse premises for a movie.
I mean, I like Jackie Chan, so Jackie Chan's great. Also makes,
if you're telling me that I get to sub out Mel Gibson and insert Jackie Chan, it's hard for me to think of a movie where I'm not happy to see that happen.
I mean, what about if we just exchange, like, it's not like there's not racism in the Jackie Chan, Chris Tucker movies either. We get bad fake Asian accents going on.
I'm not saying it's perfect. I'm saying it's preferable.
Okay. All right. I mean, we're talking about action movies, Andrew. We can go on any tangent we want to. All right. I've already made the investment. This Predator is wide. The topic of Predator encompasses a lot of things. This is my long-winded way of saying all the things that happen in Predator are, like, Predator operates on multiple levels. Like, there is the surface level of just, like, plain, like, hey, a bunch of macho dudes go into the jungle as soldiers, get ambushed by a creature they don't know what it is, and it ends with Dutch, Arnold Schwarzenegger, fighting it and killing it and winning. And, like, it works. I think it works on that level. But there's another level. There's another level below it where it's satire. This is taking every trope.
Is it though?
Yes, it is. There's a bunch of men, bunch of, like, okay, think about who's in this movie, Andrew. Okay, we have Arnold Schwarzenegger, biggest action star that's ever existed. The Rock might beat him by the end of his career, but for now, I'm going to say Arnold's still number one. Arnold certainly made way better movies than The Rock has. There is Carl Weathers, who at this point is Apollo Creed. Right? Big muscles, Apollo Creed.
Did he ever stop being Apollo Creed?
I mean, in 4, he dies. So yeah, then that's when he's...
Spoiler alert. wife is listening, don't listen to this podcast.
She hasn't seen Rocky 4?
She has not. She wants to see Creed, and I'm trying to make her watch at least some of the Rocky movies before we do.
Oh, God. But Rocky 4 is hilarious.
You have to watch Rocky 4 if you're going to watch Creed.
I like Rocky 4. I'm just saying Rocky 4 is a funny Rocky 4 is a funny movie because it's insane. He defeats communism in a boxing match.
The one thing the Predator is missing is after Carl Weathers' character passes away when he's getting blown away by the Predator, is just Dolph Lundgren leaning out from behind a tree and going, "If he dies, he dies."
Oh, I love Rocky IV, is great. But Carl Weathers, he's known as, hey, he's Apollo Creed. He is, and by God, he was not afraid of working out before he got into this, when I think of Carl Weathers, I don't think of, like, a ripped dude, but he is absolutely ripped in this movie.
All the backstage stories or behind the scenes stories that I have read about Predator in preparation for this are about how the actors were constantly trying to one-up one another in terms of when they got to the gym, how much workouts they did, what time they got up to do it. It sounds like there was quite a bit of competition, shall we say, yes, among them to see who could pump their muscles the fastest.
Machismo.
I'm sure using entirely legal substances the whole way.
Oh, absolutely. No one would. absolutely not use steroids.
It was the 80s. Everybody was clean and sober the entire time.
Yes, exactly. So you have those two guys. You have Jesse Ventura, professional wrestler. Up until this point.
Second future governor in the cast.
Exactly. That is another thing I love about this movie. Two governors in this movie. Oh, it's so silly. So Jesse Ventura, professional wrestler at this point. He had done basically nothing else. He goes on to be in bit parts in a lot of other movies, including The Running Man, which also came out in 1987, which also stars Arnold Schwarzenegger, which is also a fantastic movie. Totally different from the Stephen King book, but also good in its own right. We have Bill Duke, who is in Commando, also with Arnold Schwarzenegger. Big guy. You have Sonny Landham, who's in 48 Hours, another action movie. Then you have Richard Chaves, who plays Poncho, who is like, there's two guys, and like, that's the interesting thing. There's like two dudes on the team that are like normal looking, that aren't massively muscled, ripped guys.
You mean the cannon fodder?
Poncho lives until the end. He's the second to last one to die. Or the first to last.
I have to admit, the non-Arnold, non-Carl Weathers, non-Jesse Ventura contingent.
I like Poncho.
I also like Mac, but the rest of them become very quickly interchangeable to me.
I like Poncho a lot. He is the one. They're all chewing scenery, which kind of actually is part of my argument here. But him, and then there's Shane Black, who is a screenwriter, who apparently they had him punch up the script. He wrote Lethal Weapon, for example. He also wrote the recent...
And it shows.
And, he also wrote the recent The Predator, which I have not watched because I heard it was miserable. And I don't need to sully my memories. I've seen enough of the miscellaneous Predator-related movies to know when to not watch them. But Shane Black literally has two lines, and they're both dirty jokes.
I am shocked.
I know.
Having seen Lethal Weapon.
I know. You know. I know. It's not crazy. I think Shane Black's a good writer for the most part. You've seen Kiss Kiss Bang Bang?
I have not. It keeps being on my Christmas movie list, and I keep having to
very
talk
good.
The powers that be into it.
It's very good. I think it's maybe my favorite Shane Black movie. Maybe it's because Robert Downey Jr. is in there, and he has charm, and he can sell a lot of the stuff. I might have something
to
do with
it. You mean he's a better actor than Arnold Schwarzenegger? I find that hard to believe.
Now, Andrew, I don't think anyone is on the, hey, Arnold is a good actor. Has anyone ever said that?
I'm sure some people in the throes of the various substances that were flowing freely during the 1980s may have had that thought pass through their mind in some way, shape, or form.
Okay, I'm not defending. I'm not saying... I don't think any of the acting, quote unquote, in this movie is good.
I'm glad you're not making that argument.
But I don't. Action movies having good acting, not important to me. I don't. It does not enter into the equation.
I don't need my action movies to have great acting, but I do need them to, if they're not going to have good acting, not try to command a number of scenes where acting is necessary. Like, why in the world? McTiernan gives Arnold so many lines. I don't know. Like, who sees this guy who's like, okay, Arnold, I want you to, you know, order a sandwich at this restaurant. I will have one sandwich. All right, let's give this guy a lot of meaty monologues in this movie and have him say faux profound things for the first two-thirds of this damn thing. Like, play to your strengths. Play to the fact that you're just going to have these guys, you know, beat stuff up and shoot things and make things explode and say stupid action movie lines rather than trying to get them to emote and every once in a while graze profundity with their very important statement about the nature of soldiers in this topsy-turvy world that we live in.
I mean, that's... Okay, let's get back to. I was talking about the cast. Of this.
Sorry, I'm derailing
your point. No, you're fine. You're fine. That's the nature of the beast. So aside from Poncho, who is just, you know, the skinny guy, who actually I think actually does have the most lines in this movie. You say there's really not that much dialogue in this movie. Most of it is people walking through a jungle and then stopping. Something happens. They talk a little bit and then they keep walking through a jungle. There's not really that much dialogue in it. But I think Poncho actually has most of it. Arnold probably, because Arnold and him probably have the most, because they live the longest. So it's a product of, they have the most time to talk.
I'm surprised that Mac isn't higher on that list, because it seemed like I thought he was one of the few characters in the movie who, at least one of the few performers, Bill Duke, who got a lot of lines and I felt like made a lot out of it, put layers into the performance and kind of delivered something a little bit more than the Maria, my lion heart weeps kind of stuff.
If I was going to pick an actor among all these people, Bill Duke is probably the best one. Jesse Ventura, I'm not going to say, like, I think Arnold is very charismatic. He's not a good actor, but he's very charismatic. And that's ultimately why people love him so much. And it's the same with The Rock. I don't think The Rock is a particularly great actor either, but he is very charismatic.
I mean, I guess separate and apart from The Rock, I don't disagree with you. I do think that Arnold has a great on-screen presence, and I malign him as a verbal actor, but I will say I do think he does things with body language that make a lot of sense for his characters and convey the physicality of his situations in significant ways. And I don't think it's a coincidence that the movie improves dramatically when basically everybody else is gone. So Arnold can't talk to anybody, and he has nothing to do but convey his situation through his physicality and through his on-screen presence.
I mean, he does talk to the Predator. He calls him an ugly motherfucker.
Okay, but he talks in three-word snippets rather than thudding monologues about the nature of war. We're rescuers, not assassins. Now watch us blow up this compound of people we just met.
That's the point, Andrew. That's what I'm saying.
Is it though?
Yes! That's what John McTiernan has said that. He says, like, yeah, it's deconstructing guns in action movies. Because all these dudes, like, literally, the Predator only attacks people with guns. All these dudes have guns. Aren't effective. Guns don't do anything. They don't hurt the Predator. If they do, they hurt him a little bit. And then the way Arnold kills the Predator is with a bow and arrow, and he drops a log on him. Like, the most primitive, primal, like, it's Cain and Abel at the end. He's a rock. He's about to smash the Predator's head in. And that is what the, like, okay, break the...
How is that a deconstruction? Okay. All right.
Give me some rope to hang myself with.
All right.
It opens.
It's a rope to string your log up with.
Yeah, exactly. I need to set up that trap, and you're gonna wisely look and see. Oh no, there's spikes under this log. I'm gonna go around, and then boom, double trick, log on your head. You lose.
I will, despite the fact that I am an alien creature of some sort, just go.
Hey, that's Billy's laughter. He's just he does that. That's a recurring motif throughout the film, where he's constantly replaying back what the soldiers are saying. Which
giving us way more credit than I am for the laugh. I think somebody went, yeah, we need our evil alien villain to laugh maniacally in the final seconds.
Predator's not. I don't think Predator's evil. I don't consider Predator evil. He's just a.
Okay.
He's just. He's like.
We need our antagonist.
Yeah, I don't think Predator's evil. I have feelings about Predator, Andrew. I don't know if you're aware of that or not.
Slowly but surely getting that impression.
Yeah. But the movie starts off, and that's the thing. When I said. I don't know. I didn't record this, but before we start, I said Predator's a nearly perfect movie to me. And I say nearly perfect. Mostly, my biggest complaint about it is the very, very, very beginning, which is literally the same opening as The Thing, which is my favorite movie of all time. And it is also my only problem with The Thing, is the very, very beginning, which features a spaceship crashing at Earth.
I like that part of the movie. So clearly, we're just entirely on different pages. Like,
because
this is interesting. You know, I know this movie as just randos wandering around in the jungle and getting picked off, and here's this little bit of spacecraft that we're getting.
Well, I think that's the thing. Like, I didn't seek this out. This just happened upon my Twitter feed the other day. It probably speaks more about the people I follow on Twitter than anything. But it was a random tweet from a comic book writer who was talking about. The movies he quotes the most, and he listed Predator as one of them, which I also quote Predator all the time. It's a very quotable movie, which is one of the other – it's like one of the hallmarks of action movies as well, to me, like, if I can't quote it really a lot, then it's not a great action movie. Die Hard, super quotable. Predator, super quotable. Commando, super quotable. Terminator, super quotable.
I think you firmly identify the reason that The Artist will never be considered one of the great action movies.
Whew, there.
It's good, but it's not very quotable, in my experience.
No, no. But it's a comic book writer. He's talking about Predator. And someone, I think, replied to him about, yeah, I also about Predator and blah, blah, blah. And then he's older than us, and he went and saw Predator as a teenager with his dad. And he said when they went to see this movie, they thought it was just another Commando. They didn't know there was an alien in it. They thought, oh, it's another Commando action movie. You know, bunch of mercenaries in the jungle shooting stuff. And then they watch this movie and it unfolds in front of them with, hey, actually, it's more than just a Commando action movie, because it's not like gorillas or terrorists they're fighting. They're fighting some alien that you don't. It's a monster. It's a monster movie. It's a horror movie in a lot of ways. This probably also speaks to why I like it a lot.
I can totally buy that critique in a vacuum. Coming at this film 30 plus years later, who in the Western Hemisphere does not know that Predator is some, if not alien creature, then certainly some kind of crazy monster? Like, it's just, well, it has permeated the culture too much for me to understand. I can't understand that at a gut level. I can understand it conceptually, but you're like, oh, we get a little bit of detail as to how the Predator got there. I appreciate that setup, as opposed to, I totally get the idea that it would be an awesome surprise. You know, we were briefly talking about The Prestige and sort of how that movie does some nice setup for things that you're not expecting necessarily. I could see how this would be a cool version of that. But I also, it's hard for me 30 years later when, having never seen Predator, I knew a lot about Predator already just through cultural osmosis, to have strong feelings about the spaceship that spoils this twist that has been spoiled by, you know, what counts as Western civilization in the 80s and 90s.
All I'm saying, Andrew, is that when I watch this movie, conceptually, I don't want it. It's, have you seen Dark City?
I have not seen Dark City.
Okay. You need to see the director's cut.
That's the next podcast.
I think that I might be. Actually, I'll probably give you something if you want to pitch something to me. But frankly, no, Dark City is amazing. I love Dark City, but it also has a very similar, it's, I think it's like a pet peeve of mine, largely, where, you know, Dark City, the original theatrical cut, does the same thing this does, where it spoils a big plot point because of, like, it happened in The Thing, and it happened in this movie, and it happened in Dark City, and it's happened in, I'm sure, a lot of other sci-fi slash action slash genre movies, whatever, where the studio went, people aren't going to get what this is. We need to make sure they understand. We need to make sure they understand. Throw more information at them that doesn't really need to be there, and it ruins a central, like, a reveal, even though, like, yeah, yeah, the Predator, I don't even know when the first time I watched the Predator, if I went, oh, there's an alien. But it doesn't matter, you know, conceptually, you might go, oh, I can appreciate a film that is so confident in itself and what it is and wanting to how it portrays itself. Like, and it's the same thing with The Thing, which I love The Thing, and it's my favorite movie, but it is not perfect. Because of that same showing a spaceship crashing into Earth, and then boom, we're in Antarctica. When, if it was just us in Antarctica to begin with these dudes, and then, oh no, they discover something in the ice, and then a monster comes out, and it's a dog, whatever. That's more fascinating to me on a conceptual level, because it is kind of a display of confidence in a film and in how they demonstrate how they show and don't tell, basically. And like, don't show me a spaceship. I don't want to see a spaceship. I want to come into the Predator. I want to come into The Thing. I want to come in just like I'm one of these dudes. I think that's really where I want to be. Like, I'm presented this information the exact same way that Dutch is. It's impossible, like you said, because especially with a Predator, because it's so well known, and because there hasn't been, like, you know, they did make that thing in what, the 2010, the prequel, which is very not good. But it wasn't successful. They've made Predator 2 and Aliens vs. Predator and Aliens vs. Predator 2 and Predators and The Predator. I'm like, well, yeah, everyone knows what The Predator is, even if you've never seen a Predator movie now.
And there's action figures and spoofs and a million other
things. Todd McFarlane. It's his fault.
Everything's Todd McFarlane's fault. But I mean, the upshot is that I think, Robbie, you have a good opportunity to turn around, start offering your own director's cuts of these films and chop off the opening 2 minutes, and you can upload them to YouTube or
that's what I love about,
you know, the piracy or whatever works.
The director cut of the Dark City is it actually does chop off the revealing bit at the beginning of the movie and makes it like the in that case, that movie really hinges on this twist, quote unquote, reveal, I would call it. And it makes that movie way better.
That fact aside, I can totally see how that would be a thing that could improve the movie conceptually.
It's about
it is maybe like 73rd on my list of issues with it.
Okay.
Like, oh yeah, that 1 minute spaceship scene is
well, okay.
I would change 50 other things before
I will finish my pitch, and then we'll line by line item, we'll get through those bullet points, Andrew.
Okay. All right.
My pitch is satire is this is it is presented despite the fact, yeah, I mean, obviously, the film is not responsible for the 30-plus years of pop culture zeitgeist that came after it. You know, as presented in 1987, when you first watch this movie, sit down and watch it, it's presented as a bunch of soldier dudes, big muscles, all famous to varying degrees for being in action movies. Arnold Schwarzenegger, chief among them. You see it has all the action movie tropes. It literally starts with him smoking a cigar in a helicopter in their weird late 80s clothing. I really like their casual wear at the very beginning of the movie. and Dylan's tie, a tie is really bad. That's a very bad tie.
It's so hard when you're watching an 80s movie to know if something is, at least in terms of clothing, meant to be weird or signify that the character has poor fashion sense, or if it's just the 80s and that's how people looked.
Yeah, you're just like, is that tie supposed to be terrible, or is it just like, oh, that's how people wore ties like that in 1987? But like immediately the first thing we get is Arnold Schwarzenegger, muscly dude who literally has men on his team who they've been in. All they talk about the entire movie, like while they're alive, I should say, is like, oh yeah, that time in Cambodia, the time in Berlin. Like they talk about all these operations they've been in on, and it's like obviously, and like Max, like little soliloquy talking about them going through a meat grinder, him and Blaine, and they're the only ones alive. And they talk about old painless that literally they're carrying a minigun with them. Miniguns that are mounted to helicopters. Men don't carry miniguns. You can't carry it. It doesn't. Men are not capable. It is ludicrous. All of it is ludicrous. Them and Arnold going, oh, we're not assassins. We're a rescue team. And Carl Weathers rolls his eyes. He rolls his eyes and looks at the general, and the general's like, "Eh, let him believe it. It's fine." And then, what do they do? Like you said, what do they do? The first thing that happens in the movie after they discover the bodies in the helicopter, and they discover the skin bodies of the second rescue, the first team that was sent in to do this, I guess they have the big action scene of the movie, like which would be in a regular action movie. Would be the final set piece. It would end the movie. Like in Commando, that is literally what happens. This is like the ending of Commando, except Arnold has a team. In Commando, it's just Arnold killing 100 people with machine guns and various other weapons. In here, it starts the movie. It is 15 minutes in, maybe. And
it's more than that, I think. It's like the climax of the first act, I want to say.
Yeah, you're probably right. 30 minutes in.
Something like that.
And that typically this would be the final action scene. They rescue the fugitives and the movie's over. But it doesn't happen. Instead, the fugitives, the refugees, or whatever they are, the hostages.
It's not important.
It doesn't matter.
Nobody
really
cares what they are.
The victims, the dudes, whoever, they're killed, and Arnold and his buddies murder, what, 50 dudes at least? Probably more. I didn't count.
A lot of people.
A lot of people
have no names and barely have faces that are not being exploded with bullets.
Yes.
And impaled on sticks and having cars heaved at them.
That is, yes. Yes, Arnold Schwarzenegger straps a bomb to a truck that only has two front wheels and lifts it, and it drives into a camp and explodes. And then they murder everyone. And they themselves are barely injured. Blaine gets a flesh wound. He doesn't have time to bleed. But does
future governor of Minnesota.
Does he have time to duck, Andrew? And what would be the final set piece of a normal action movie of the time period of a commando is just the end of the first act, and really is the only real big action set piece in the movie, aside from maybe, like, if you want to consider the showdown Arnold has at the end, but I don't really think of an action set piece because it's him, like, hitting an alien with a log.
I think the Carl Weathers scene counts as an action set piece. I think there's a lot of action set pieces in it. They're smaller scale than that, but I think they are pretty clearly, like, there are definitely sequences where you go, nope, yep, this is where the action happens. We're going to pause for whatever else is going on, and here is the action.
Let me adjust. Let me clarify. Meaning a stereotypical action set piece of the movies of that ilk, with lots of gun violence and lots of explosions and lots of death. After that initial set piece, there's only 7 people left.
I mean, again, I would count the big Carl Weathers scene in that category.
When his arm is blown off and it continues to shoot on the ground?
Yes.
I love it. I love it so much. So
I love it less.
It's so silly. How can you not like it?
I mean, honestly, I feel a little bit about this argument the same way I do the argument that Starship Troopers is a satire.
It is!
Look, I'm not denying it entirely. I think there's definitely over-the-top elements, but I think the movie and the people behind it are playing a little coy about it. I think they want to have their cake and eat it too, and that even if McTiernan is feeling satirical about this, I don't know that the people writing the script were. I don't know that Arnold and company were.
Well, it's funny you mentioned Starship Troopers, because Starship Troopers functions literally the exact same level, where Paul Verhoeven made that movie with bad actors on purpose, I think. I think, aside from Neil Patrick Harris, who I think is a decent actor for the most part,
and Clancy Brown is in that.
That's true. Those are small parts. The trio
and Hank Schrader. Sorry,
yes,
Hank... actors from Starship Troopers.
Hank Schrader is Hank Schrader is only. I think there's an interesting. I was watching a video about it, and I think Hank Schrader at that point is only 4 years older than the lead. Then what's his face? Then the terrible actor man. Then forget his name. But
discount Jason Priestley.
Yeah, but he was only 4 years older than him, yet he looks 20 years older than him because he's perpetually middle aged. He has the Gene Hackman syndrome. But it works like for it. You can't wink and nod at the camera. It won't work. You have to have bad actors. I think in Starship Troopers, it's more pronounced because they don't have the charisma of Arnold Schwarzenegger. No one does. Or Carl Weathers, for that matter. Or Jesse Ventura. Any of these guys. All these dudes in this movie are way more charismatic naturally, you know, physically, like you were talking about earlier with Arnold. They are naturally, like, Jesse Ventura is a professional wrestler. That's what he did, you know, be naturally charismatic with his movement. And they're like, the guys, people in Starship Troopers don't have any charisma, and that's the point, I guess. But it doesn't make sense for, like, that big budget action movie, but that's how it's presented. I can't, Starship Troopers, like, your point that this is not, like, it's kind of cheating, I guess.
I think the lady doth protest too much on the satire front.
But, I mean, Starship Troopers, you can't I don't think Starship Troopers is cheating. Starship Troopers, like, I mean, literally, like, Denise Richards is one of your leads, as, like, she is, sorry, Denise Richards, you're not doing it, I'm sorry, you're all bad, you're all those, like, Nick Nolte's son, Gary Busey's son, Nick Busey? No, what's his name? Gary Busey's son, who plays, like, a supporting character. I think it's Nick Busey. That's why I said Nick Nolte at first. I think it's Nick Busey. But he looks like Gary Busey. So, but like they're not. He played a killer in The Frighteners, and he played some terrorist in Contact. And then not much else. He's good in The Frighteners, but doesn't have to do much in The Frighteners. But that's what I think that's what this is. Like it starts off with us at, like we're in a normal action movie and then we're not anymore, and yet these are characters from a normal action movie, and then they're put into a movie that's not an action movie. Like it starts off that first 30 minutes, you're like, oh, we're in an action movie, this is normal, they kill everyone, they're barely touched, they're fine. It sets them up as invincible action men, and then they all get killed one by one. It's like, it's a slasher movie, you know? Jason is just the Predator instead of Jason, instead of Mike Myers. That's my pitch, okay, Andrew? That's what I'm saying. I'm saying, I love cheesy action movies. Commando is not a good movie. I still really like it. I can appreciate Predator on that level alone as a cheesy action movie that turns into a horror movie. But why I think it's the best action movie ever, it's more about that there's another, that second layer, you know? Like I love The Simpsons, and I think Homer's Enemy functions perfectly well as a Simpsons episode, but I think it's the best Simpsons episode because it has that second level, second layer, or maybe even third layer of meta narrative of us exploring what this genre is. If it bleeds, we can kill it. I ain't got time to bleed. I love Predator.
I'm not saying there's nothing more to it, but I think that Predator has layers in the way that a frozen pizza comes on a circular cardboard disc. What you're getting is very cheesy, and what is underneath it is very thin and can't really support it. Predator takes itself more seriously than you're giving it credit for. I know there is stuff in it that is over the top. I am skeptical as to how much that is intentionally there to comment on the tropes of the action movie genre and how much that stuff is there to thrill that action movie audience. Because they do the horror movie stuff at the same time they're doing the action movie stuff. And even when they're doing the action movie stuff, I feel like they are very sincerely trying to make important statement about something. I don't buy it. I can imagine there is some over the top for over the top's sake, but I don't know that that is meant to be a commentary so much as it is meant to be a feature. And to the extent it is operating on multiple levels, I don't know how much of it makes it into the film itself. I don't know how many other people working on the film knew that the film was supposed to work at multiple levels, because I don't think it comes out.
Is that are those things mutually exclusive?
In what way? That people have to know that they're in a satirical movie to be in a satire? Yeah. No, I don't think that's the case, but I think you need everybody rowing in the right direction, rowing their oars in the right direction. And I think there's too many signifiers that point in the direction of sincerity and earnestness, or at least what passes for it in the context of an 80s action movie, to fully excuse those very exaggerated elements as satire in a way that you're willing to do, and I don't think I can, or at least I don't think it's communicated well, if it's the intention, which I'm not even convinced of.
I mean, I think it is. You bring up Starship Troopers. I think that's exactly what it is. I think that you don't tell them. You tell them, no, this, play it like an earnest action movie.
I think there's ways you can play something straight and have it come off like satire, but I also think there's ways in which you can go too far into that to where at some point you are just making the thing that you are supposedly satirizing.
But I'm gonna ask you, why can you tell me why Die Hard is the best action movie?
I think Die Hard is a better action movie. I'm not saying it's the best action movie.
What's the best action movie?
I don't know. I mean, it's a pretty, I'm going to say it's an important question, but it's a question I would want to give more thought to before I just blurted out an answer.
That's an important question. I need to do some research. Let me come back.
It's at least one that I would not necessarily feel comfortable. It's a question where I would give you an answer, and then 2 hours from now, I'd go, oh, damn it, there's that movie. That movie is better. Yeah, that's a better action movie. But I think that Die Hard
better?
Is a better action movie is that it has better set pieces, it has better characters, it has a better villain, and it has something to latch onto in the story that makes me care about what is going on beyond just the mechanical, if at times exciting, elimination of character after character. Like, I care what happens to John McClane. What happens to John McClane in that movie? What happens to him and his family? What happens to the police officer he is communicating with through all of this? Who makes it out of here and how and what they do is something that matters to me when I am watching that movie. I could not care less about pretty much anybody in Predator besides Mac. Mac is maybe the one person who I'm like, I feel something for that guy, and I hope this thing sees him well. Everybody else is just a cardboard figure who gets trotted out through the jungle to get mowed down by an admittedly cool alien monster. And you have a very difficult time keeping my attention for an hour and 40 minutes if the only thing you are giving me to connect with on any sort of level is guys who are rippling with muscles but can't string two sentences together and have the depth of personality of a pan pizza.
I like pan pizza, to be perfectly
clear. I like pan pizza too, but there's a reason they tend to be a lot smaller than the full-fledged pizzas. give me the third act of Predator, and I am a happy camper.
Well, let me.
I don't need or want anything more from this movie than that. It's the first two-thirds where they are trying to do things that other movies do and other action movies do in some instances that it completely loses me.
Okay, well, let me try and reframe this for you, Andrew.
I'm trying to keep an open mind.
Okay. Name any of the victims in Halloween that aren't Laurie.
There's the doctor, right?
He's not a victim. He lives. He doesn't get killed.
Fair enough.
Dr. Loomis.
You're right. I probably cannot.
There's
her friend, right?
There's her friend and the other person, that dude. Yeah, like, and that's, that, like, I
but
think.
But they don't try to make those other people characters.
Andrew, I'm not saying that these are deep characters. I'm just saying that they are enough for us to recognize, it's Blaine. He has a minigun. He chews tobacco. There's Mac. He's friends with Blaine. He has a little thing of whiskey that he carries with him. They know each other for a long time. There's Dutch. He's the leader. He smokes cigars. He thinks that they're not killers when they totally are. There's the Shane Black who just tells dirty jokes and then gets murdered very quickly in the movie. So,
I mean, the aside from Mac, all of the characters in Predator are a row of identical chickens that the movie puts different hats on.
I mean, that's what slasher movies are.
They are being led to
though.
The slaughter. That is it. You know.
I mean,
and forgive me for neglecting Madame Sideboob, who is. Perhaps the, you know, look, far be it for me to critique the 80s movies once again for not having the best gender politics in the world, but it is another embarrassing quality of this film that here is this token female who is, given no very few lines of dialogue in English and exists basically only to be an accessory to Arnold, who he gets to save and win the affection of at the end of the movie.
There's no affection.
I mean, at some point, I'm going to have to make my peace with this. This is, if we're going to watch 80s movies, I'm going to have to make my peace with the fact that they're not going to serve their female characters well. And maybe that's what you say, is this movie doesn't serve any of its characters well. So why should she be different? But it is another embarrassing thing in this
point. Yeah, they're not really characters. I don't really think of much about that in action movies. I don't like, I think of like, oh, I can identify one or two I like in Die Hard, I think of John McClane and terrorists.
Are you kidding me? There's a lot of good characters in Die Hard.
There's cocaine businessman. He gets killed. There's a bunch of terrorists that'll have little traits before they die.
And again, forget the terrorist. There's his wife. There's his erstwhile partner who's played by the dad from Family Matters.
Carl Winslow.
Carl Winslow. I was going to say, I didn't want to say Carl Weathers again because I was about to.
Carl Winslow, who always plays a cop in every movie he's ever. What's his name?
No, wait, that's not the actor's name. Carl Winslow is the character.
That's the joke, Andrew. Matters. That's the joke I was making.
Is Carl, they're in continuity with one another. It's plausible.
Carl Winslow is. It's not a. I understand. It's not actually him. It is.
Like you have the sergeant who tries to come in and take charge. Like, that's the great thing about Die Hard, is not every part is particularly big, but there is much more character and much more personality and much more lived in people populating that world than anything in Predator.
I'll
say this for Halloween too. Like, yes, you're right. Most of the people in that movie are cannon fodder, but you care about Laurie and you care about Michael Myers in a way that I don't care about Arnold Schwarzenegger or even the Predator to some extent until you get to that last act when they stop trying to have them say things or do things and just finally have them fight and have this struggle.
I care about these cardboard cutouts. I care about Dutch. I like Dutch. I like Arnold Schwarzenegger. How about that? I'll make that even broader. I don't really, whatever Dutch is, or Dutch is Arnold. It's not like it's hidden. Arnold plays Arnold in most of his movies. I like Arnold. I want Arnold to win. I want Arnold to kill that alien. That alien probably, I don't think Predator is evil. I think he's just, that he just hunts stuff and he considers us, you know, lower form of life. So we're okay to hunt, you know, but.
As flies to wanton gods are we, they kill us for their sport.
I don't remember that from Predator. I've seen Predator a lot, but I don't remember. I remember the Predator going, and I remember.
In the subtitled version, that's what he's saying.
Oh, okay, I get it. But I care about them in the same way I care about any heroes of an action movie. Like, I don't.
You've got to develop them. You've got to give me something to latch onto. It doesn't have to be a lot. It doesn't have to be super deep. I'm not, contrary to my quotation, I'm not asking for Shakespeare from Arnold Schwarzenegger. But I need more than a proto Tommy Wiseau monologue about the.
That's not fair. All right, no. Okay,
I think it is. That's not fair.
Don't compare Arnold to Tommy Wiseau. Okay,
in his delivery of lines in this movie. It is profoundly Wiseau-esque. I would not put the rest of that evil on Arnold Schwarzenegger. No. I would not put the rest of God, the various things that Tommy has said and done on Arnold Schwarzenegger. But in terms of the delivery of dialogue in Predator, I think if you didn't know better, you could play snippets of it back to back with that and the
that is not fair.
Person would not be able to tell the
difference. I'm not going to say any of the line delivery, any of the actors in this movie is amazing or even good. It is not Tommy Wiseau. Tommy Wiseau is an alien. Tommy Wiseau is more like the Predator than he is any of these actors.
Oh, Robbie, well, it seems that you are the expert. I contrary to everything that I'm saying right here, I like Arnold Schwarzenegger too. I think he has a lot to bring to a lot of kinds of films, but you have to use him well and you have to play to his strengths. I don't think that Predator does that. I think it gives him too many lines of dialogue. I think it tries to put too much on his shoulders as a performer verbally, and it makes it too much about his psychological struggle in some way when I just don't think that fits with this movie.
Psychological struggle? What do you mean?
Like the, you know, don't you see the, like, he's him learning that they are expendable and no, we're not assassins, we're rescue, and oh, my brothers are leaving me, I've got to figure out this primal struggle kind of thing. Like, when they make that try to make that subtext in there. It's just,
I mean, Andrew,
it's an unironic McBain movie.
I don't.
That is it.
I mean, I yeah, stand you're by not. That. I don't.
It is what McBain was making fun of.
I know, but I don't know. When I watch a movie like this, I don't. It's window dressing. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. This movie, it doesn't. Oh yeah, well of course.
Characters matter.
Mm.
Having people you care about matters. Otherwise, it's just a, you know. Otherwise, I can just watch disaggregated clips on YouTube. It doesn't need to be a movie. If the characters don't matter, then just, you know, give me a short. Give me
30 you know, minutes.
The random spectacle.
It doesn't work. It has to. That's what I'm saying. It has to have the empty spectacle.
It doesn't work.
It has to be. Well, no, it has to have that first hour of empty spectacle for that last half hour to mean anything.
I disagree on both counts. I think if you had a movie that was just the third act of Predator and, you know, maybe cut around Arnold arriving in the jungle, hell, maybe even keep in that dreaded spaceship scene in the beginning.
No!
I think you have a perfectly coherent story there. If anything, a more coherent story that is just about this primal struggle rather than pretending that there's anything else that matters in this damn thing.
But that's the thing. That's what it's about. It is about the ridiculousness of it all. It is taking all the ridiculousness, all the excess, everything that Die Hard rejects. Die Hard rejects all of it. You have the only characters from normal action movies in Die Hard are the FBI guys. Everyone else is in a different movie. The FBI guys are from Rambo. They show up and they're going to blow up everybody. Everyone else in Die Hard is characters from a normal movie dropped into an action movie. This movie takes all that ridiculous stuff. It takes the dumb plots of Rambo 2, where in First Blood, John Rambo is a Vietnam vet who hates life and is a drifter and is stuck into a fight with cops that he doesn't want. And he's like a real, originally he was going to end by killing himself. And then in Rambo 2, he's suddenly a Reagan-esque American hero with giant muscles with machine guns, just murdering people for no reason. And yes, it's absolutely ridiculous and doesn't make any sense. Exactly. Why are all these characters friends? Why are Mac and Blaine friends? Because they've murdered a bunch of guys together. That's the basis of their friendship.
I mean, presumably they've been through shit together. Pardon me, I'm sorry. We're talking about.
I've said ugly motherfucker on already.
Okay,
so
fair enough.
We're talking about Predator. You have to curse. I try and withhold my cursing for the most part unless it's necessary. But we're talking about Predator. It's very important. But
I mean, I guess I buy the friendship in concept. I buy that, hey, these are just, whether or not their personalities match especially well, they have been through a lot of things together and that creates a certain camaraderie. I can accept that, at least at a conceptual level.
But you cannot disconnect like the slasher portion of the film where the Predator is picking off people and then the final showdown with Arnold. You can't just cut. You have to have the empty spectacle of a dumb muscle action movie for it to say something. It doesn't need to be like a good movie. It just needs to be a good action movie. Those are not necessarily the same thing to me.
I mean, I guess I just need more from even my action movies. I'm not saying it has to be the most in-depth story or the most well-developed characters in the world. I just need more than we got. Have to have somebody who I care about in the movie, and Mac is definitely not the focus of it and goes away very quickly.
I mean, he makes it like an hour. I wrote the time when they all died. Mac dies at an hour and 11 minutes in, where he gets
all right, well then he at least needs more focus than he gets in this movie.
I mean, they don't, none of them get a lot. I mean, Dutch gets the most time because it's Arnold, but I think, yeah, there's not character development in the movie.
I don't need them to be developed. I just need them to have personalities beyond catchphrases and hats.
I mean, that's what action movies stars are. Tell me, what is Rambo? After First Blood, tell me what Rambo is, Andrew.
I am not turning to Sylvester Stallone.
but that's you know, have to
death of action
movie. But look, this movie is operating in that milieu. It's operating in that sphere. It is not trying to make. It is saying like, yes, this is what it has to have. It has that set dressing. It is just wallpaper of action movie, and it has to go for that. Like you said, it seems too sincere in being an action movie. It has to.
I don't think there's anything that prevents an action movie from having, if nothing else, a protagonist with some dimension and personality beyond the wallpaper level.
Arnold likes cigars. Dutch, he likes cigars. He thinks Dylan has been pushing too many pencils.
That's not a personality. Those are tics, damn it.
Okay, I'm just saying this movie is. I'll break away from the whatever the hell the movie is, but I will say it looks beautiful. It's well shot. You can actually, you can actually like it's not just constant shake cam. It's not Jason Bourne, which I think the Bourne movies are good, but I can't stand the constant shaky cam. Filming this is nice long. John McTiernan knew what he was doing. Long shots, like focus the camera on. Like it looks very pretty.
I don't disagree with you there, and I mentioned that in my write up. I think it's one of the best things the movie does, and it, frankly, like in the opening scenes where they're just kind of exploring the jungle a little bit, and you say, okay, there's time for them to make me care about these people. He has some really nice long shots where he kind of focuses on different characters moving through the jungle at different times, all in the same shot. It's intricately done. And I do think visually, not always, but at least a lot of the time when it's not in the, we're going to rain bullets on random, I guess they're not civilians, they're fellow soldiers, but you know, just rain bullets and fire on randos period of the film.
Gorillas, not gorillas.
Gorillas. I think there is a lot to this film aesthetically. And I wouldn't take that away from it. Honestly, if they even reduced the character instead of trying to pretend that they had characters and just made them cannon fodder, that might even be better because it would put the visuals and the tension of the predator lurking there even greater focus than it does. But I'm with you, Robbie. I like the way this movie looks. I like the way the movie is shot. And I think it's why the third act of the film is the best. And for me, the, you know, redeeming part of this experience for me, because it puts those qualities of the film front and center. That third act is fueled on not just the special effects, which are great, but on shooting Arnold and shooting the Predator in such a way that it creates dramatic stakes and tension for this elemental fight between man and monster in a way that, you know, it's kind of wasted when you're just trying to frame Arnold to talk about the pencil pushing. Why always with the pencils, Blaine? I do not understand.
Well, I mean, okay, we're going to come back to my thesis statement about Predator after. But also the pacing as a slasher movie. Like when you think about monster movies, they always say, you know, you don't want to reveal that, you want to wait as long as possible to reveal the full monster. I mean, we don't see any part of the Predator until 54 minutes in. We see his vision. The first time we see out of his vision is 18 minutes and 50 seconds in. And then it's briefly. And then another time, the next time we see is 31 minutes in. And that is after the big action set piece where they kill all those poor dudes who aren't ready to walk into the meat grinder that is known as the Predator Force. And then 38 minutes, we see it. We see what Max sees with the eyes. I think. Oh, no, that's even later. Sorry. I'm getting all my notes messed up. But it builds on itself. I don't like this movie solely because of the meta-ness and of the action. Like it's well constructed. It builds on itself. It escalates from, hey, this is an action movie, to, oh, these men who you think are invincible are now facing a force that is greater than them, something they don't understand and aren't prepared to fight. When we first see the vision of the Predator, when they cut down those bodies. They cut down the skin bodies of a army dudes that were sent in, I guess, prior to them. Dutch asks Billy, what happened? Why? How did this guy, he talks about knowing this guy before. And he's like, well, how can he walk into an ambush? And Billy, the tracker, is like, he didn't. He says there was a firefight. They were firing in all directions. And they didn't hit a thing. There's no trace of them. There's no trace of what they were fighting. And then 30 minutes later, when Blaine is killed and Matt grabs his minigun, picks it up, fires just blindly into the jungle, and everyone else joins him. It's the same thing. It's simple, but it's effective. They are engaging in the same behavior of those dead men, and they kill the forest with guns.
I'll agree with you that I like the slow unspooling of the Predator. There is a good introduction and rollout of him gradually. At some points, I do think it gets overstretched. And maybe that's just because I get tired of spending time with the human characters. And I'm kind of like, get on with it already, Predator. Take him out. Let's just get to this. But I do think the pacing for at least the Predator character is well done. And you do find yourself introduced to him gradually in a way that makes him scarier and scarier until he is known. They capitalize on the fear of the unknown, that same Halloween fear of just seeing something at the margins until you see it in full view. That it's very well done. And I think the Predator itself is one of the strengths of this movie. Were that its human elements were as well thought out and well apportioned.
I love the creature itself, I think, is my favorite movie monster of all time.
Better than Alien?
Yes.
Not to pit these creatures against each other for yet another time.
Oh my god. I don't want to talk about Alien vs. Predator or Alien vs. Predator 2 Requiem. They're very bad.
It's because the second one's rated R.
I
want you to know that.
It'd be great if I could see the movie. If it wasn't so dark that I can't see anything that's happening on the screen.
Oh, don't worry about it, Robbie. We'll just sit down and watch a nice episode of Game of Thrones instead.
Can we just color grade things so that people can see them? Is it that too much to ask? I'm sorry I'm imposing on your art, but can I see the thing I'm trying to watch? Oh, I can't because I'm not watching on a $10,000 television? Oh, too bad. For me, I guess. Sorry.
In fairness, some of it is standard compression that should be avoidable, but at the very least makes it not necessarily the people's fault who are making the damn thing.
They don't need to go on the internet and be smartasses about it. That's what I would say. they could say, I'm sorry that you weren't able to watch it the way you intended. That's how you'd be nice and diplomatic about it.
Robbie, without the opportunity to go on the internet and be a smartass, I would not have a career.
That's not true at all. You're generally extraordinary. You're more fair than necessary most of the time, I would say, Andrew, actually.
Very kind thing to say.
But I love the Predator. I think he's better than the Alien from Alien because there's no Geiger baggage with the Predator. which
Geiger baggage is good, at least design-wise.
How much do you know about Mr. Geiger?
Very little beyond the designs themselves.
Oof-a-doofa.
But I wouldn't hold that against the results.
I like the Alien. Alien's great. I think Predator's better. Because of the acting that Kevin Peter Hall does as the Predator, I think...
Don't forget Jean-Claude Van Damme.
I was going to say, we're going to talk about Jean-Claude Van Damme because that is an insane thing that the internet had brought up and has explained over the years that for a long time I had no idea about because there was no internet. All I know is, hey, this Predator thing looks cool. And then I'm like, wait a minute. Jean-Claude Van Damme was going to be the monster for a while and then he didn't, thank God. We're going to talk about Jean-Claude Van Damme. After we talk, I do want to say the design is great. The reveal, the slow reveal of what it looks like, and then the pull off of the mask and revealing the mandibles and Arnold, ugly motherfucker. I love it all. Put it right in my veins. I want more. The movement of Kevin Peter Hall as the Predator. The 7 foot tall guy wearing a bunch of makeup and a costume and mask and all this stuff. And yet he makes him so distinctive, how the Predator moves, how the Predators can be threatening and move and be humanoid, have two arms, two legs, and yet move differently than a human moves. And great.
You cut out there for a second, but then I can hear you again.
Skype is great. I kept the actual portrayal of the Predator is great, and the physicality required, it is almost, it's like a weird puppeteering in a lot of ways, and the Predator is perfect. Jean-Claude Van Damme, JCVD. I did not know this for a long time, but he was originally cast as the Predator.
Which makes sense kind of conceptually if you think about it.
He's a martial artist, very physical, makes a certain kind of sense.
It would be a clash of styles, and if you think of somebody, you know, when you think of a predator in the jungle, you think of a lion or a cheetah or something that is more sleek and graceful almost, you know, on the hunt. Not necessarily, and this isn't a criticism of the Predator, but I don't think, I could see somebody saying like, okay, yeah, here's this jungle creature that comes out and attacks our heroes. They could expect something more agile and fluid than we get with the Predator in the film, who I think works well for the film's purposes, and they do it very well. But I can see the thought process behind wanting to bring a Jean-Claude Van Damme to play the monster.
And you go, okay, and then there's many... There's many conflicting stories about how Jean-Claude Van Damme was hired and why he left the picture. The most likely story to me seems that when you see the original suit looked like, which is like a weird insect-like creature, and it was color-keyed red, I guess, for purposes so that they could, you know, use effects on it.
I'd say that was for the... They used the same thing for the actual Predator,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, the camouflage.
Doing
yes.
The
light-bending stuff. And then they filmed some stuff with this weird insect creature shape, and they took it back to Fox, and Fox thought it was terrible. And so they needed a new monster. So they designed the new Predator, and when I think at a certain point they said, we don't need you anymore, Jean-Claude Van Damme, and you're not great as this monster anyway, and you seem to not like it very much, because apparently you don't see the monster. You wouldn't see Jean-Claude Van Damme. It's not like you're going to see his face or anything. It's just a monster. So he either quit or was fired, depending on who you ask.
He had Tobey Maguire syndrome. They weren't seeing my face enough.
I think I would take Tobey Maguire over Jean-Claude Van Damme at the end of the day.
I'd have to think about it.
Unless it's Bloodsport.
Depends on the movie.
If it's Bloodsport, I'll take Jean-Claude Van Damme. Any other movie, I'm taking Tobey Maguire.
Not for nothing. Jean-Claude Van Damme is pretty funny and enjoyable in Expendables 2, which I feel like does we're intentionally going over the top for comic satirical effect in a way that I find superior to Predator, but not to send shivers down your spine, Robbie.
I don't think Predator is, I don't want it to be funny. I just want it to be like, I want it to be satirical, but not funny.
Well, I think you've got half of that.
I know. That's why I think that's the fundamental difference between you and me. In our feelings about this movie, but I feel like the Predator design's great. I think the anecdote about Jean-Claude Van Damme somehow being in this movie and then not is very, very funny. He then went on to do Bloodsport, which is another good action movie. You've seen Bloodsport, Andrew?
I have not seen Bloodsport.
Oh, Andrew.
It'll be the next podcast. Or
no,
Dark City.
I don't. We're not seeing Blood. I don't. Bloodsport's not good enough for Bloodsport's. Bloodsport's fine. It's not. It's fine. That's all it is. It's Jean-Claude Van Damme. You can talk about how good Arnold is an actor. Jean-Claude Van Damme is terrible as an actor. Just miserable.
I'm honestly not sure I've seen him in a movie other than Expendables 2, so I feel bad. Wasn't he on an episode of Friends? And he was okay.
If you're asking me to talk about Friends at length, I'm not capable. I've watched one entire episode of Friends, maybe.
Well, I guess my larger point is I don't feel comfortable dragging Jean-Claude Van Damme, given such a small portion of his oeuvre that I have seen.
I've seen multiple Jean-Claude Van Damme movies. I enjoy some of them. He's a very bad actor. He's a very good martial artist, and he's in incredibly good shape. But he is a terrible, terrible actor. And he makes Arnold Schwarzenegger look like Shakespearean in contrast. I'll say that. I love the soundtrack as well. I love the soundtrack, Andrew. I can listen to repeat over and over and over again. I don't know if that just speaks to my childhood and how many times I watched this movie, but I love Long Tall Sally in the helicopter, and then we get
there's a lot in the soundtrack of we need to tell you how to feel because the actors cannot convey that on their own.
I mean, isn't that what a soundtrack's for?
If it's used properly, it accentuates the mood that's already existing, as opposed to trying to Herculean task load the mood of the film and the atmosphere of the film on your back and give it some emotional resonance, however feeble it may be.
Alan Silvestri, who had just...
It's a good... Don't get me wrong. It is a good soundtrack. It is perhaps used more often than it might otherwise have been, were it not so badly needed in so many places.
But he also scored the sequel, which is not... I wonder how you'd feel about Predator 2.
I mean, is it different?
It's very different.
Well, then maybe I would like it better.
It's,
I don't know.
It's
maybe Danny, I would just find it a different flavor of bad.
It's Danny... It's a little bit more cartoonishness than this. And it's Danny Glover in L.A., in the far off future of 1997.
Whoa. I like inadvertent period pieces.
It also gave birth to Aliens vs. Predator.
Well, yeah.
Because Danny Glover, at the end of the movie, kills a predator and goes onto his spaceship, or onto a predator spaceship, and sees all of his trophies from across space, and among them is an alien skull.
I mean, why not, right? I love little touches that are not...
Why not?
...serious sequel hooks or serious continuity bits, but are just like, hey, this could be a fun thing.
It birthed many, many comic book series and two bad movies. Aliens vs. Predator is miserable.
I'm willing to believe you on this.
It's so bad. Lance Henriksen is in it, I guess. I could say that. He's fun. Because he's Lance Henriksen, but other than that, very bad. We're talking about Predator. I'm probably never going to podcast about any Predator ever again. Why do we have to make more the modern Predators big? Like, bigger? Like, they turn into linebackers. So, I like this Predator because he's kind of, like, lithe. Like you said, he's not thick. He's big, he's tall, and he's wide. Like, his arm, he has a big wingspan. But he's not, like... 6 foot across. He's not like, I don't like, they turn him into like giant, like they put shoulder pads on him or something. I don't like him. I don't like it. I'm going to make that a statement official. I don't like it.
I haven't seen it, but I will ratify Robbie's statement.
You don't need to change the look. It's perfect the way it is. Why you got to complicate things?
Disney, fix it.
Disney does own Predator now, don't they?
They do.
Oh, weird.
The Predator is officially a Disney princess now.
Is that what we're doing now with everything is just a Disney princess?
Well, I'm pretty sure that Frozen 2 is just a backdoor pilot for Frozen or for Elsa versus Predator.
What about, I mean, the Alien Queen is now a Disney princess as well.
She's not a princess. She's a queen. It's an oxymoron in your own statement.
I mean, queens are evil, though. Princesses are good. Isn't that what is that? So who's the princess? This new to princess?
I mean, I guess
you don't like you don't like aliens, Andrew. So I don't know what I was. I should have realized when you said you didn't like aliens that you probably wouldn't like too much about Predator.
I like Alien. Like Alien a lot.
Well, I mean,
it is arguably a better version of this same framework where you have the monster slasher movie in sort of the science fictiony realm, but you have freaking characters in it.
I mean, Alien and this are not the same genre, Andrew.
I'm not saying they're the same genre, but it's a similar move to like, hey, let's do a slasher flick, except let's make an alien the slasher, and we'll do it in a kind of unique enclosed environment.
If you're gonna ask me to argue if Alien's bad, you're gonna bark up the wrong tree. Alien's great. I love Alien. Alien's a hard movie.
I'm not. I think Alien is great.
Alien is great. Aliens is also great, and you don't think so.
No. That's again another podcast for another day.
That's what I mean. I think Aliens is also Alien and Aliens are fantastic movies, both separate from each other.
I mean, look, I will fully accept that I am the iconoclast here. I am the one who is saying that Aliens isn't good and that Predator isn't good and that Lethal Weapon isn't good. So, you know, I am fully willing to accept and admit that my 80s action movie thermometer is probably not set to the same settings as most people's.
You just need to watch. I'm going to sit you. You got to watch Commando and Rambo 2 and Death Wish. 1, 2, and 3, and there's other Running Man.
And will you pay for my echolocation training when my eyeballs melt out of my skull?
No, I'm sorry. You're gonna have to. It might be covered with your insurance. You might want to check. Call them. I'm not really responsible for that. You have to call HR about that.
Predator related injuries.
Serial Fanasis HR. Give them a call. I'll give you an email address. Maybe we have good people over there. Absolutely looking out for your best interests.
Okay. Give him a call.
Let me think if there's anything else I want to talk about. Predator. I love Predator. Andrew, love Predator.
Robbie, you son of a bitch.
I can't help it. I don't know. There is a certain, I will admit, there's a certain level of Predator I love because I watched as a kid and I loved it then. And it is on that surface level cheesy action movie stuff. That got me as a kid. But now I see more. I see, you know, that's probably explains why I like Starship Troopers too. Because I can put up with bad acting and bad delivery because I see what the director is doing some weird thing.
I like Starship Troopers well enough. I probably like it better than the Predator, if you can believe it.
No, Predator. Predator.
Pardon me, I don't mean to Predator mix up with the Shane Black one.
The Predator is a totally different movie.
Predator,
that is apparently
Predators, the Predator.
Really bad. I don't know.
A Predator, he, she, or it Predators.
I mean, the next one, the Predator bombed really bad, so I don't know. It might be, they'll give it another like decade, and then we'll get another Predator movie, probably.
No piece of IP that has ever been successful is fully gone.
It's really unfortunate.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, it's fine. You know, it doesn't upset me, but it does make, does, I'm like, I just wish they could leave it well enough alone, but.
The thing that you like is a remake of an earlier movie, right?
That's true. But the thing and the thing from another world are, if you sat down someone and said, watch these two movies back to back, most people go like, I see it. There's some similarities, but they're not, they're very different from each other. And like, if someone made a Predator movie that was like the same way the Thing from Another World is the Thing is a remake of that, there, like, there's not very, the, like, what other remakes? The Fly, Jeff Goldblum's with the Fly movie, and the Thing, what other remakes are there that are good?
I mean, Casablanca.
Casablanca is a remake of when? Like a movie from like 1918?
it's a remake of an earlier movie. I think it had come out maybe 5 or 6 years earlier or something.
That was 30 years before I was born, so I can't really.
I mean, I'm just saying there's a lot of good. Remakes are inherently bad.
I don't think there are either, but the good ones are. We've literally listed three, and the bad ones are innumerable. And Predator's fine, guys. Just let Predator sleep. That's what I would say. We don't need any. I think we're an Alien too. I don't want any more Alien movies for that matter. Just let it give us a break, please. Ridley Scott, please stop. He's not going to stop.
I think Ridley Scott is also a Disney princess now.
that's true. H.R. Giger is also a Disney princess. He's not. He's passed. Anything else you want to add about Predator, Andrew?
The only thing I would say is that I think I would honestly, you're going to hate this, Robbie.
Oh, great. Love it.
I would welcome a remake of Predator. Maybe not the ones that we've had, given your reports on it, but I think it's an idea for a movie, if nothing else. I think there is and I say this in my write-up, I think there is a simplicity to the premise that lends itself to what could be a really interesting and well-done film. And I think that somebody could take this basic input and maybe use different performers, maybe, you know, use some of the commentary that I think, Robbie, you see and that I don't necessarily see in the film, and make it more present, a reflection of the action movies that we've got in the ensuing 30 years. I think there is a lot of meat on the bone there. I don't think this was a bad idea. I just think it was a good idea not done particularly well. So I would be happy to see somebody take another stab at this or something like this and make something else out of it. I don't hate it on principle. That's what I'm trying to say. I don't hate this thing that you love on principle, Robbie.
I don't think you hate it. Hate is, I think you just don't like it. That's different than hate.
I think if the third act had gone on the same trajectory the first two had, I might have hated this movie.
I mean, what would that look like?
I don't know. Just more... If it had been Arnold and the gang versus the Predator versus just Arnold versus the Predator, I'm not sure if I would have liked the movie even as much as I did.
Well, it didn't happen, so don't worry about it. I'm glad you liked the movie, then. I think that's what you're saying.
That's where we'll land.
Okay, I'm glad you liked the movie. I'm glad... Andrew,
I'm glad we could share this, Robbie.
Yeah, exactly.
That I'm glad.
Andrew, where can they find your writing online? Let me make this very explicit. Andrew wrote a companion piece, or his review of the Predator. I don't agree with what he says, but it is still written very well. You should go read that. Okay, guys, you listening? I'm going to tweet out a link. I'm going to put a link in the show notes. Andrew, where can they find that piece and all your other writing?
People can find that piece and many, many more of my incorrect opinions on my website, which is theandrewblog.net. You can also find me as part of Consequence of Sound's expanded film and TV section, where I covered the most recent season of Game of Thrones, if you want more raging over how light or dark something is filmed. And you can also find me talking about Predator with Robbie and many other things on Twitter, where you can find me at theandrewblog. So, Robbie, thank you again for, as we did with Trading Spaces, let me come on to your show to criticize a thing that you love from your childhood. It's a very gracious thing to do, and I sincerely appreciate it. I really do.
I have one final question for you, Andrew.
What is it?
Bran? Really?
Oh, my God. Don't. We've talked enough about people who entirely lack vocal charisma being promoted unduly in the span of a long-running series.
I just want to put that
sleeping creepsters lie
on the record. Bran, guys, really, George R. R. Martin, you got
spoiler
time.
Alert for Game of Thrones. I guess
you've got George R. R. Martin. This is a direct appeal to you. All right, I'm never going to do a Game of Thrones podcast, so this is my direct appeal to you, George R. R. Martin. I know you're listening. You got time. All right, please, you have time to fix this.
I have a question for you, Robbie.
Oh, what is that?
Who has a better story than Bran? Clearly no one. Clearly nobody else. Everybody else's stories in that show were boring and uninteresting and not at all compelling.
You have George R. R. Martin.
Blank staring weirdo.
George R. R. Martin. The
person Mr. Martin. People
Mr. Martin, by. I love your writing. I think you're a great author. Please. Anything but Bran. Anyone but Bran. The dragon being king is better than Bran. Please do something. Please. Not Bran.
All hail King Hot Pie.
Thank you for joining me, Andrew.
Thank you, Robbie.
Bran. Thanks again to Andrew for joining me. You can find me on Twitter at Robbie Dorman. My website is robbiedorman.com. You'll find links there for my other podcasts and my new horror novel Truth, available now on Amazon. The show's website is serialfanaticist.com, and you can follow our Facebook page at facebook.com/serialfanaticist. If you like the show, please give it a 5-star review on whatever podcast service you use, subscribe, tell your friends. All the things help me find new listeners for the show, and I really appreciate it. Until next time, thanks for being a fan.